welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the fifth day of September 2019. Holy Frank Tanana, I feel like I've just been subjected to waterboarding, although I wish I had been waterboarding rather than sitting through that CNN town hall. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in, telling a friend, pressing play, downloading, sharing on social media, tackling random people on the street, grabbing their phones and subscribing. However you do it, spreading the word. You're the only real sort of advertising we got to push this show out, and you're doing it. So thank you. You are my heroes. It is, like I said, the 5th of September, 2019. It's my wedding anniversary. So happy anniversary to my wife for the luckiest decision she ever made. She's never going to hear this, so I can get away with saying that. As always, you can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. And just compliments, complaints, whatever you got. Some of the complaints, I'm reading these complaints, and it's like, really? You took the time to write that? Okay. Some of the compliments, I'm like, really? You took the time to write that? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's very nice. Thank you for all of them. I read them all. I don't get a chance to respond to all of them right away, but I respond to them eventually. It's just with kids running around and writing duties and other jobs, it just eats up my time. And then sitting there and watching 7 hours of CNN's town. We've got a bunch of audio from it since you didn't. Clearly, you're in a straight jacket in a padded room right now. You clearly did not sit through the 7 hours of television. I love these people are like, waterboarding is torture. Now here's 7 hours of Democrats talking about a single issue. I think if you played that at Gitmo or any CIA black site, everybody would just tell you, they'd just give up. They'd be like, stop this right now. Here, everything you want. Go get them all. Here's where they all are. But just please stop this. Elizabeth Warren's segment alone would be more than enough. Like I said, we got a bunch of other things to get to as well. It's going to be an action-packed show. But first, a word from our sponsor, action-packed show, you say. Well, there's some packing going on in your body, and it's time to unpack it. Let's talk about Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. I've been drinking Life Change Tea for over a month now, and I noticed that I'm feeling a lot better, and I can't tell you how much more energy I have. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a delicious tea, and it's the tea that makes you go. It's a gentle daily cleanse, designed to rid your body of harmful waste that's stuck inside you. It's a squeegee, if you will. Let's face it, our food was different 60 years ago. It was minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. Pesticides, herbicides, and incredibly heavy. Everything is processed these days. They're depleting the nutrition from our food. It's no wonder you feel so run down. Try it for yourself. Go to GetTheTea.com now. That's GetTheTea.com and get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. I have a gallon of it, freshly brewed, up in the fridge. Follow the instructions. It ain't a chugging tea. It's tea with a purpose. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Enter promo code Derek, my name, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. And boom, you get free shipping. You'll thank me for it. But like I said, make sure you follow the instructions. It works really, really well. Okay. Oh, good Lord. I watched that thing starting at 7 o'clock. I had the kids running around, so occasionally I had to stop to play some PJ Masks or let them climb all over me or stop them from climbing all over each other. But I had that CNN mess on for almost 7 straight hours. When it came time to 10:30, I put on House Hunters International because I text and make jokes about that with my sister every night. And it was Beto talking. So, I mean, Beto, who cares? But it was a 7-hour in-kind donation to President Trump's reelection campaign. It really, honest to God, was. There wasn't a dime's worth of difference, really, on any of the major issues between any of the candidates, and each one of them, whoever ends up being the nominee, each one of them said at least three ridiculous things, three insane things that could easily be repurposed for a campaign ad to let the American people see what they're really getting if they vote for Democrats. They want to get rid of all cars. They want to get rid of air travel. They want to ban fracking. They want to get rid of coal plants. They don't want any nuclear plants. They want to get rid of those too. You name it, they want to ban it. Pete Buttigieg wants to build trains so you can go from New York or Detroit to Indiana to Chicago. Well, there is a train from Detroit to Chicago, if you want to go that route, or you could just drive it and get there on your schedule and get there much faster. I've taken the train to Chicago. It's a fine ride if you got some time to kill and you want to sleep while you get there. There's nothing wrong with it. The wrong part comes in when these people want to get rid of every other mode of transportation, basically make you ride buses that will have, you know, solar panels on the roof. And when the night comes, well, that's where you're sleeping. And if the clouds come in, that's where you're stuck. Maybe they'll bust out a sail on top of these boats as well and just go the full green 9 yards. Although they all say that their green plans will create millions of jobs, so maybe instead of dog sled attachments to the fronts of the buses, they'll just have human sleds up there. And, you know, hey, it's good work. It'll keep you fit. You'll definitely get a workout, but you won't get where you're going in any timely fashion, because if you've ever ridden Greyhound, for God's sakes, it'll take you 3 days to go 20 miles. It was the poor. I once took a Greyhound from Gaylord, Michigan, or somewhere up there camping with my friend. I was not feeling well. I was like 10, and I got homesick, and they put me on a Greyhound. It's like a 3-hour drive to where we lived in Detroit. And I swear it took 15 hours. Every small town in the middle of nowhere has a bus stop, and you had to stop at all of them. That's why radios were invented. Couldn't you call ahead, hey, anybody there? No? All right, we're skipping you. But no, that's the world that they want to create for everybody. They literally have called for the elimination of cars. They want electric cars. And what I found telling about how unserious these people are, including the CNN so-called journalists who were allegedly moderating this thing. They weren't. All the introductions were, climate change is an existential threat, going to kill everybody, and we're here to discuss this very important issue with Democrats. There was no, you know, challenge of any sort. There was no disagreement from any of the moderators. It was all, you know, when somebody said something absolutely insane, they just said, okay, yeah, that sounds about right. Got to do what you got to do. They all want you to, they don't want you. They're all going to make you drive electric cars, like I said. What's interesting and what wasn't asked, because there was no serious follow-up and no serious dives into anything or pushback or honest questioning from the so-called journalists, what they didn't address was, where are you going to get the electricity for all those cars? Because that's kind of important. I'm no electrical engineer, but I understand that these things run off of batteries, and those batteries are not charged with the good vibes of hippie liberals or even their smugness. Boy, if you could charge a car's battery off the smugness of the progressive liberal elite, well, then we would be a net energy exporter from here until the end of time. But that's not how batteries work. Even these lithium-ion batteries, these wonderful batteries that we all have in our phones and everything that occasionally burst out into massive flames, those batteries need electricity put into them, and then they store them. The second they start storing them, it starts to deplete. It's very tough to store energy, but that's neither here nor there. If you could get a battery charged, you've got yourself a battery. And electric cars are out there on the roads. I see these Teslas driving around, the $50,000 to $100,000 golf carts zipping down the freeway. One thing an electric car has going for it is the second you put down the accelerator, people move. It moves. It's like an electric golf cart. It's kind of funny watching people drive an electric car for the first time. They really should be much more careful than they are, because you're used to putting the gas down, and then that puts some fuel into your engine, and then the compression starts and the spark plugs spark and everything gets going, and then you start moving and you slowly accelerate. Whereas with an electric car, all the power you put into it goes to the tires, and it goes there immediately. So you take off, and you take off quickly, and people don't understand that. They're overwhelmed with a sense of smugness. But the question for people who are saying we need to get rid of the internal combustion engine is, where do you get the electricity to power these electric cars and these trains? And presumably it can't be far behind electric planes that they want to try and fly. And to that I say no thank you. But if you want to try and do that, the power has to come from somewhere. And the vast majority of our electricity comes from coal. It comes from burning coal. That was not really addressed. It's just snap your fingers and everybody's going to be driving an electric car. They want to build hundreds of thousands of refueling stations or charging stations across the country. And no one was asked, where's the juice going to come from in there? Oh, they were all up there giving their opinions about everything else. They won't go for nuclear. They don't want hydroelectric. They don't want anything. They just want to get rid of coal. It's not a very well thought out plan, but of course the liberal media and the liberal punditry on CNN reacted with, my God, these people know this issue so seriously and they're absolutely committed. It's wonderful that they're so committed to this important issue. If they were committed to this so-called important issue, they would not just be speaking in platitudes and spewing out whatever happens to come to their mind. That's my job. So let's get to the question. But it is really the audio. But it really is an important question. You're going to put electric cars out there. We already hear constantly our electric grid is strained. Every time it gets hot in the summer, everybody always acts surprised. My God, it's summer and it's hot. Can you believe it? It must be climate change. And then in the winter, it's winter and it's snowing and cold. What happened to global warming? And they all say weather is not climate. Stop talking about it. You're misunderstanding the importance of the issue. Weather is not climate. And then when it's hot in the summer, they again say, see, climate change. They're fundamentally unserious people, because when the issue was the coming ice age in the 70s and even going back into the 50s, the solution was always the same: more government, more regulations, higher taxes, cede your liberty, government control. Then it became the global warming issue. In the 70s, it went, then the 80s, it went to the exact opposite direction. It's going to freeze. No, wait, we're going to boil. And the solution, miraculously and curiously, stayed exactly the same. We need all these regulations, taxes, more government power, government takeover, infringements on your liberty. That lets you know that it's a fraud, ladies and gentlemen. They have a solution in search of a problem. They want power, and this is a delivery device. They will, before we get into the audio clips, I just want to point out something that I pointed out in my book, Outrage Incorporated, for those of you who are uninitiated. If you notice, back in the 90s, starting in the 90s, we were given 10-year warnings. Actually, starting in 1989, we were given 10-year warnings. If we don't do something dramatic in 10 years, it will be too late. Then what happened? We didn't do that something they were demanding that we do, and 10 years passed. And the doom and gloom that they were telling us was going to happen didn't happen. So they then said, we've got 10 years. Every year, we've got 10 years, 10 years, 10 years, 10 years. Enough times that happened that people started to notice, hey, wait a second, aren't we supposed to be like Waterworld, the movie Waterworld, by now? Shouldn't we all be swimming? Shouldn't we have gills? What's going on? What happened to these doom and gloom predictions that not only didn't come true, didn't even come close to coming true? We didn't even start heading down the path of these things being true. So what did these true believers, these so-called environmentalists, do? Did they do what a normal human being would do in that situation when you were insisting that something was going to happen and it didn't? Did they reassess? Did they sit back and say, my God, could I have been wrong about this the whole time? No, they did not. What they did was stop making 10-year predictions. They started making 100-year predictions. I don't know much about the future, although if like transporter technology happens after I'm dead, I'm going to be pissed and I'm going to haunt everybody because of that. But because I really want transporter technology. But they never question it. They just started making 100-year predictions. Now, why make 100-year predictions? There's a very, very important reason to make 100-year predictions. Because after 30 years of making 10-year predictions that did not come true, they recognized that a 100-year prediction wouldn't blow up in their faces. They would be fine if they make 100-year predictions. They can sit, because everybody who hears it will be dead by then. So you can say by the year 2100, we are all of humanity will be dead unless you cede your liberty, raise taxes, so on and so forth to the federal government. And nobody can disprove it. Of course, they can't prove it, but who cares about proving it? Science is no longer about proving it. Science is about majority vote. It can't be disproved, and that's all they really care about. It's about manipulation. It's about a political agenda. It is not about science. If it were about science, it wouldn't all be based on computer models about the future. That's what people don't understand, and that's what isn't reported in the media. These predictions all have computer models backing them up. One example of a prediction is something I write about in my book, that in the year 2100, lightning strikes could more than double. To which I say so, but that's the level of so-called science we're doing. There's a lot of qualifiers in that study. It's this could happen. It might happen. It could go down. It might double. Well, that's not science. Science is you do this and this happens. We prove it. We can demonstrate gravity. Drop anything. There's gravity right there. You know, Sir Isaac Newton, the apple falling on his head, the famous story of the so-called discovery of gravity. You can demonstrate certain things. Fire burns. Touch fire and it burns. You don't need to take a vote of scientists to determine that. It's proven, and it's demonstrable or demonstrable, depending on how hoity-toity you get with your English. But when it comes to climate science, it is all about, well, the coastal community, the ocean could rise by 10 feet by the year 2100 if we don't act now, or by 2030, or whenever. Well, it could. It also could not. Remember, these are people with a storied history of wrong predictions. None of them are lottery winners. If they could predict the future, you would think that one of them would at least buy a winning scratcher. But that's the dirty little, that's the trick that they use. They have these computer models that say, in year 2100, the temperature will be 5 degrees warmer, or whatever the magic number is. And you say, okay. Well, that's interesting, because that's all, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. You don't know what new technology is going to come up. Maybe they will find a car or a train or a plane that powers itself with liberal smugness. That would definitely reduce our carbon footprint, because we got a glut of it here in the United States. So it's all made up. But if that climate model were so wonderful about going into the future, you would think that you could take that climate model and say, go back to the data from 1900, or even better, 1950, and plug in that data and your wonderful computer model upon which we are supposed to cede you our liberty and control of our lives because of what it burps out saying that will happen in 91 years, that computer model should be good enough to tell us exactly what happened, right? Because we have a record that we could check it against. You put in all the data leading up to the 1950, and then you say, all right, what's going to happen in the next 60 years? And you hit enter, and theoretically, if your computer model is to be believed going forward from here, it should pretty well parallel what has happened already. The dirty little secret is it doesn't. They don't. The computer models fail when actually put up against real data. Why? Because human beings have very, very minimal understanding of climate. Our climate is incredibly complex. No matter how smart we think we are as a species, and whatever computers we build, our computers are really only as smart as we can make them, and they can only do something with the data we put in them. And we've been collecting data for less than 150 years, or right around 150 years. Really only reliable data since the 1950s, 1960s, once we were able to get satellites up there and collect the real important data. We're dealing with a nano piece of a nanosecond in the history of the planet Earth, yet these people want us to subjugate ourselves to government based on that little tiny sliver of a whisker of human, of world history and human history, planet history. I say no. I say thank you. I'm going to pass on that. They know these things. Not a single issue was brought up about the failures of these doom and gloom sayers. Nobody, you know, if the perfect example, if Barack Obama really believes that we are going to see catastrophe in a decade, if the ice caps are melting and we're all going to die and the coasts are going to flood and be uninhabitable, and that was a big topic of discussion, what do you do with all these people who are living in places that are going to be made uninhabitable by climate change? And all the candidates said, well, we've got to just open up the checkbook and write giant trillions of dollars worth of checks to move people to safe places, because climate change will make lots of places uninhabitable. They didn't ask the question, you know, one candidate should have turned to the camera and said, but former President Obama and Michelle Obama, you just dropped $15 million on an oceanfront property in Martha's Vineyard. Do you not understand that that's going to be underwater in a decade or maybe 15 years? That doesn't seem like a smart move. No, they didn't bring that up. Nobody's brought that up because, of course, Barack Obama knows. None of these Hollywood types, none of these rich media types, none of these people are giving up their beachfront homes. None of them are moving to the mountains in Colorado and setting up a bunker with self-sustaining gardens or anything. No, they're not doing that. They're living the dream. They're living waterfront. Why would they do that if they believe what they're saying? They fly private. Why would they do that if they believe what they're saying? Because it's not about the environment. The environment is the delivery device. It's about control. It's about power. They are above everybody else. Just ask them. They really do feel that they are morally superior to we mere mortals. And they sure as hell aren't going to change their lifestyles. They want to enact laws to force you to change your lifestyle. And with that rant, because I could have done the whole show with just a rant about this subject, let's get into some of the audio. My God, where to begin? It started with Julian Castro. It was very interesting. 5 o'clock rolls around and Julian Castro is up on your TV, and you know it, you're not in for a good time. Julian Castro, the former mayor of San Antonio, I love how he talked about how he what he would do differently if he were mayor of San Antonio. And he talked about the initiatives that he would have initiated if he would have had another do-over as mayor of San Antonio. The little dirty little secret about the mayoralty of San Antonio, Texas, is it's it's largely a figurehead position. The city council has all the power. The mayor really has none. It is a go to parades and cut ribbons at openings sort of job. But when you're a Democrat, you can claim that that's an accomplishment because, well, as long as you can tie your shoes or at least only wear slip-ons and nobody finds out you can't tie your shoes, but they think you do, you're miles ahead of all the other Democrats. Listen to Julian Castro. He's asked, you hear the question here. He's asked about whether or not climate change should be taught in schools. It's kind of hilarious because if you think that liberal teachers aren't blasting kids about climate change constantly already, you're living in a fantasy world. But his answer is essentially the tobacco industry model. Hook them while they're young. You got to brainwash them. Repetition leads to acceptance. No matter how absurd the claims are, we must continue to hammer home climate change so that we can squash dissent. Used to be, you know, differing opinions in science were overcome by evidence, but they don't have evidence. So they want to go through generational brainwashing. Here's the clip.
Gianna.
Our beliefs and habits start at an early age. Should climate change be taught in schools? And if so, how should climate education be implemented in the school curriculum?
Yes, I believe that it should. In fact, I believe that it's essential if we want to raise a generation of Americans that will, you know, do right by our planet, make the little decisions in life that are going to help ensure that we can get where we need to get to net zero.
Oh, you're already a net zero, Julian. But don't you love that? You got to start early. You got to get them in there. I think if we're going to get the kind of control that we want over people and the squashing of dissent going forward, we have to use public education system to indoctrinate people. We're graduating kids who can't read or write, but damn it, they'll vote properly. And that's really all they care about. It's kind of disgusting, but it's weird. It's rare that they admit it publicly. And so openly, but they did. But Castro wasn't done. See, he's a Democrat. And the party was named ironically, I can only assume, because what he goes on to say from there in a continuation of his answer is he starts complaining about conservatives being elected to school boards and statewide positions of power in education, being elected to them. Because they have a say in curriculum. This is the arrogance of the left and the fascism of the left rearing its ugly head. I haven't seen much commentary on this on Twitter last night. You'll probably hear it a lot on talk radio and podcasts after they listen to this program, of course. But this struck me as very odd and very dangerous and yet typical of progressive thinking. He hates democracy when it doesn't go his way, and so he wants to, by force of government, essentially overrule the will of the people because the people's elected representatives think improperly, according to him. You'll understand it when you hear the clip.
I think if we're going to get there, though, and this doesn't just apply to curriculum about the environment, it implies a whole bunch of other stuff. We need to do things like end this system of people that get elected, whether it's in Texas or other states, they get elected and then they sit on a statewide board that determines what is in curriculum. And too oftentimes, right-wing conservatives have taken over these boards in places like Texas, and they affect who gets into the history books, its slanted view on social studies. It's probably against including any kind of meaningful curriculum on the environment. So there's some structural changes that I believe that we need to make. But I do believe that that kind of curriculum should be taught in our schools because that's how urgent this crisis is.
See, Democrats are all for democracy, except for when they lose. When they lose, why, the bigots won. And we can't have them doing the jobs that I wanted because they'll do it in a biased way. They're accusing the other side of exactly what they're doing. And they will eventually turn Texas blue if things keep going the way they're doing. And then God help us all. Why Texas is so important, why the textbooks, Texas is gigantic. And if Texas says, we don't want this in our textbooks, we want this in our textbooks, we want it focused on X, Y, or Z, well, the textbook companies can't make textbooks for every school district around the country. This one's really rabidly left-wing and hates America. It's just Howard Zinn, essentially, with a new cover. And it's for your progressive district. And then this district over here likes the country and likes Americans. And so we've got this textbook for you. No, they can't do that. They can't afford to do that. So what the bigger states, whatever direction they go, tends to be foisted upon in textbook form the rest of the country. And Julian Castro is very, very upset that people who don't ascribe to his politics have a say in what goes into history books. They want to further get their claws into children and do it through the education system. Because when a teacher tells you something, most students will sit there and believe that teacher. Because the teacher is a position of trust that we as a society sort of impose on everybody. You go to school, look, listen to your teacher. Make sure, what did your teacher tell you today? Do your homework. Do what your teacher said. So when a teacher starts spewing left-wing garbage, parents are always surprised that, oh my God, my kid is so liberal. Well, you've been telling them to listen and trust their teacher. Because that's what, it was okay. You could do that when you were a kid. You can't do that anymore. The education system has been weaponized. But we've known that. Rarely has any Democrat bothered to come out and explicitly say it like Julian Castro did. But he did it. And I sat there and my jaw hit the floor. I'm like, my God, did he really just say that? Next, since Castro isn't going to be president, he's just a way to illustrate where the Democratic Party is these days, let's go to Elizabeth Warren next, shall we? There is a way to generate electricity that has zero emissions of CO2. Zero emissions of CO2. It is incredibly safe and wildly effective and fairly inexpensive once you get past all the regulations in building a plant. And it is, of course, nuclear power. So you would think that this would be the solution, but Democrats don't want nuclear power either. Their buddies aren't going to get, you know, all their buddies, all their funders, all the people. It's kind of funny because they all bitched about the influence of big oil and big corporations. And that's why we still use fossil fuels. No, we use fossil fuels because they work. Because solar panels don't work. They don't work when the sun doesn't shine. Windmills don't work when the wind doesn't blow. Coal always burns and will generate electricity. Nuclear is the same way, with zero so-called carbon emissions. They're all very concerned about the carbon emissions. But they don't want nuclear either because they want control. Their buddies don't control the nuclear industry. Their buddies control the wind and solar industries. Plus, it's about a general state of control. They want what they can control and what they can profit off of. So Elizabeth Warren was asked about nuclear power. Relatively simple concept, nuclear power, and a very, very efficient way to generate electricity and incredibly clean. But you would think they would embrace it. She, of course, and none of them do.
What is your opinion on the prospect of nuclear energy to help replace fossil fuels? And what do the risks outweigh any potential benefits?
So you rightly point out about nuclear energy. It's not carbon-based, but the problem is it's got a lot of risks associated with it, particularly the risks associated with the spent fuel rods that nobody can figure out how we're going to store these things for the next bazillion years. So here's how I see it. In my administration, we're not going to build any new nuclear power plants. And we are going to start weaning ourselves off nuclear energy and replacing it with renewable fuels over, we're going to get it all done by 2035, but I hope we're getting it done faster than that. That's the plan.
We're going to replace nuclear power, the most effective, efficient way we have to generate electricity, with renewable powers, wind and solar. Wind and solar. I don't know if these people realize how much space is needed to generate the kind of energy we need as a country through wind and solar. I'm not talking about the politicians. I assume they have some general idea. They just don't give a damn because they know it's not ever going to actually happen. They're lying to people. But once they get the power in place and they get the authority and the taxes and everything, they can slow walk the rest of it. They've already got their objective. But it would, you'd have to pretty much cover the entirety of the center of the United States with solar panels and wind farms to generate the electricity that we need. Whereas, you know, nuclear power plant here or there could do the job pretty efficiently. They wipe that off the table. Why? Because there's a Jane Fonda movie. It wasn't the French Connection. It was the China Syndrome. I've never seen it, but I hear it talked about all the time by the anti-nuclear crowd. It was a movie about, my God, this nuclear power plant is going to kill all of these people. And they bring up 3 Mile Island. Oh, the 3 Mile Island. We almost had a meltdown at 3 Mile Island in New York. Nobody, not a single human being died in 3 Mile Island. The worst nuclear disaster the planet has ever suffered outside of Hiroshima and Nagasaki was Chernobyl. And Chernobyl was bad. It was bad. There's no doubt about it. But the number of people that died from Chernobyl is not very large. It wasn't good. Nobody should have died. And it was human error, not a design flaw. It was human stupidity. They should have known what was going to happen when they were doing the test that they were doing when everything went to hell. So then they'll cite Fukushima. Yes, Fukushima, a nuclear power plant in a place called the Devil, what is it, the Ring of Fire, where there are volcanoes and fault lines and earthquakes constantly, and you put it right near the ocean. That just all seems like a bad idea, but it is also incredibly rare. I've talked about 3 instances. One was a nothing burger at 3 Mile Island. Yes, it could have gone worse, but it didn't. And the other 2 were certainly not good, but did not end civilization as we know it. And they're citing them as saying, well, that's why we need to get rid of nuclear power. Not any more nuclear power. We need to get rid of it. California, it was getting rid of its nuclear power plants. They're walking that back now, by the way, because reality has a funny way of impacting people when their electoral futures are on the line. But I just found that interesting. Nope, we're going to get rid of nuclear power. We're not going to expand nuclear power, and we're going to get rid of nuclear power when I'm president, says Pocahontas. Not to be outdone. I mean, there was a lot of stupid said last night. Let's go to Mayor Pete, shall we? It's been a long time since we heard about Mayor Pete. Mayor Pete was the flavor of the month a few months ago. Now he's just one of 31 flavors. He's like butterscotch or some other wildly unpopular flavor of ice cream that Baskin-Robbins eventually has to melt and throw down the sink because nobody buys it and it's past its sell-by date. He tried to make an analogy about the so-called climate crisis. And he went to the go-to. It's amazing how many of these people went to the World War II analogy. I don't think they understand history at all. But they're also counting on their audience not understanding history at all. And on that, it's a pretty safe bet. Here's Mayor Pete.
Having this same conversation for years. I think in order for that to happen, we have to actually unify the country around this project. And that means bringing people to the table who haven't felt that they've been part of the process. I mean, this is the hardest thing we will have done, certainly in my lifetime as a country. This is on par with winning World War II, perhaps even more challenging than that. Does anybody really think we're going to meet that goal if between now and 2050, we are still at each other's throats? It's not going to happen. We've got to figure out a way to rally, and that means everybody, from cities to farms to the federal government to the international community. I'm prepared to lead us to get that done.
We have to rally. It's going to be tougher than World War II. We lost over 400,000 Americans in World War II, but no, giant government subsidies to our donor class, it's going to be tougher to get that done, and it's more important than defeating the Nazis. Well, we beat the actual Nazi army. The ideology has settled nicely in the Democratic Party. Nazis are, of course, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Does that sound conservative to you? Of course they are of the left. They were darlings of the progressive movement here in the United States until they became enemies of the United States. They really were. The president of the United States envied the power that Adolf Hitler had and some of the things that Mussolini was doing. Woodrow Wilson was a fan of Mussolini. That's how sick these people are, and they still call themselves progressives. But speaking of Nazis, Bernie Sanders gave perhaps the night's most honest and disturbing answer when asked about abortion. He's asked about population control. Now, I'll tell you about it after we listen to Bernie. Really, just it is. It's a shocking answer. Of course, they all agree with this. Every Democrat is down with this cause. They just don't often admit it.
You're from New Milford, Connecticut. Martha, welcome.
Good evening. Human population growth has more than doubled in the past 50 years. The planet cannot sustain this growth. I realize this is a poisonous topic for politicians, but it's crucial to face. Empowering women and educating everyone on the need to curb population growth seems a reasonable campaign to enact. Would you be courageous enough to discuss this issue and make it a key feature of a plan to address climate catastrophe?
Well, Martha, the answer is yes. And the answer has everything to do with the fact that women in the United States of America, by the way, have a right to control their own bodies and make reproductive decisions. And the Mexico City Agreement, which denies American aid to those organizations around the world that are that allow women to have abortions or even get involved in birth control, to me is totally absurd. So I think, especially in poor countries around the world, where women do not necessarily want to have large numbers of babies, and where they can have the opportunity through birth control to control the number of kids they have, something I very, very strongly support.
Abortion as population control. The scariest thing about this isn't necessarily Bernie's answer, because we all kind of knew that was Bernie's answer. It's the fact that the woman asking the question is a teacher. Yes, she's teaching someone's kids today, perhaps right now. But this idea, it's all part of eugenics. We breed out the undesirable people. What we really need is a good famine. What we need is a good genocide. What we need is a good war or plague to wipe out people, especially the undesirable people. Because the planet can't sustain it. We're all going to die. The overpopulation of the planet is coming soon, and we're all going to die. Well, this ain't the first time we heard this song. Back in 1968, there was a book written by a Stanford University professor named Paul Ehrlich. And it was called The Population Bomb. It was wildly popular, sold a ton of copies, and scared the hell out of people, and was the darling sort of book, the Bible, for a while for environmentalists. And the fundamental principle of the book was that by the late 70s and 80s, thanks to overpopulation, because the Earth's population, there were like 3 billion people at the time, and that was only going to go up. And there was no way that the Earth could support that many people. The fundamental assumption of the book was that because of overpopulation, hundreds of millions of people would die because of famine. It was going to be widespread. Worldwide famine. We could not produce enough food to feed more people on the planet. And therefore, we needed to control the number of people we have. Now, always going hand in hand with that, and then the concept of eugenics, which has been a progressive principle since the start of the progressive movement, is that some people just should not be allowed to reproduce. Their genes should be allowed to die out. They are undesirable human beings. The elite, of course, can do whatever they want. They look at China's one-child policy and think that's a pretty good idea. That's the way it should go. Because the leaders could have as many kids as they wanted and just keep it a secret from the peons, the riffraff, the serfs, the slaves. But this idea that the Earth is being overpopulated has been around for a very long time, and it has been proven false every single time. We have more food than we know what to do with on the planet. Farming has advanced significantly. We can get more crops per acre than we could just 40 years ago, for example. But Bernie to sit there and say, well, no, yeah, we should. We should have abortion. We should be funding abortion around the world. Abortion, abortion, abortion. We need population control. It's all about control. They want to be able to approve who can reproduce and who can't and how many children you have. And then they want to take your children starting at the age 3, under the guise of it's pre-K, or actually they want them younger, under the guise of universal child care from the federal government, and keep them on the government teat until they finish their education, whenever that happens to be. If they don't go to college and it ends there, they go to college, government's got them through that, through grad school, whatever you want. It is about power, it is about control. But it is shocking to hear somebody essentially say, yes, we need to basically encourage abortion to control world population, and the United States needs to lead that fight and fund those abortions because we're all going to die otherwise. It's one of the greatest lies ever told. It was told in 1968. It has been told since 1968. It was actually told in several books before then, but the biggest seller, the biggest impact book was The Population Bomb, published in 1968. If that were true, we'd all be dead by now. Again, science. The book was based on science, The Population Bomb. We're all going to die. Too many people. You couldn't possibly feed that many people. And then what happened? We had more people, and we were able to sustain human life that way. It's very, very weird, very, very bizarre. Another candidate who was at this thing was crazy, sniffy Uncle Joe Biden. Joe Biden didn't really make an impact at this thing. He didn't make any major gaffes. He almost made one. He probably said too much and might end up catching a little flack over this as more people catch it. But the big takeaway from Joe Biden's participation in this thing was that his left eye was like filling with blood. I'm not even kidding. I noticed it about halfway through his thing. Maybe it was there the whole time. But his left eye to the left of his iris was all red. It was like just, it was underneath. It wasn't like dripping blood or anything. Very, like maybe he took a spill or something. I don't know what was wrong with his eye. It didn't look like pink eye to me. But listen, one of the only real audio that's worth listening to of Joe Biden is it sounds like he almost gives away classified information. And you think, what are you talking about? It's a debate on climate change, dude. What are you talking about? Well, Joe Biden can find a way to just screw up anything. That's real settled science. But listen to this clip. I think he's referring to where our reconnaissance planes take off from and where the stealth fighter takes off from. But there's probably something more to this because he catches himself. And for Joe Biden, this is a step in the right direction. It sounds like he's building up to say something, and then he goes, I probably shouldn't have said as much as I said already, so I'm not going to finish this thought. Or it could just be that he forgot where the hell he was going and decided to stop. Either way, this is not a good look for Joe Biden.
Look what's happened in the Midwest. We have a number of significant bases that relate military bases that relate to our national security that in fact were rendered almost useless, including I can't go into the great detail to say it, but my point is it significantly reduced our national security.
What the hell is Joe Biden talking about? Now, with Joe Biden, there's a 75 to 92% chance that he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. But if he were going down the yellow brick road toward revealing some national security secret, that's incredibly dangerous and something we need to know. Someone needs to ask Joe what he was talking about, where he was going with that point. Because if in a casual CNN conversation, you get to the point where you almost reveal national security secrets, you've got no business having national security secrets. You have no business even sniffing around the Oval Office. You need to go to the retirement home, and you need to be kept away from other people and have no visitors, because you clearly are dangerous. It's another, you know, bit of evidence that maybe Joe Biden is going a little senile if he almost revealed national security secrets. Our final contestant of the night, now the real one who was there at the end was Cory Booker, but Cory Booker said literally nothing worthwhile. And he suffered from going last, and it's a single issue, and when you've got nine people talking about one issue for 7 hours before you're 6.5 hours before you get up there, everything you're going to say or you have to say has already been said. So nobody pays attention to Cory Booker. And that's how it should be. Nobody should pay attention to Cory Booker. Oh, I guess I have two more people. One real quick, Beto was there too. One real quick Beto clip where he blames all the problems of Central America on the United States. Why? Because he's a moron. And he hates this country, and he hates you. He just wants to control you.
So that we do not trigger a crisis in the Amazon. Once it is set, we will never be able to roll back. This is our opportunity. That is the threat that we face. And so we must be an international leader on these issues. In Brazil, in Guatemala, where we've helped to precipitate a drought that they have never seen before, which has forced families to travel 2,000 miles to come to this country seeking asylum and refuge and salvation, only to have their children placed in kids and their parents deported back. We have to understand that we are all connected on this planet. We all have a responsibility.
You've caused a drought in Guatemala, you stupid Americans. It's all our fault. Therefore, we must have open borders. You gotta love that logic, because we're told they're fleeing violence and they fear for their lives from violence. Who knew that the violence was the weather or something? Beto is too dumb for his own good, because being dumb in a Democratic primary is a virtue generally, but, well, being dumb constantly and always saying stupid things doesn't really help. People are marching 2,000 miles to come to the United States because of a drought in Guatemala? Well, there's rain to the south. There's rain just to the north. Everywhere else seems to be getting rain. Why is it that Guatemala is so special? Is it because we're driving SUVs? Beto thinks so. And therefore, we should welcome, what, every Guatemalan? Do we owe that to them? Or might they be coming here because their government is corrupt? Their government is incompetent. Kind of, I mean, hell, you might be able to be elected president of Guatemala if you really get to it. They keep electing morons and corrupt idiots. You're qualified for that one, Beto. But I love that. That's why they're running. That's not the narrative we're told, Beto. We're told that they're fleeing. They fear for their lives from gang violence and government corruption. Oh, no. It's just because it hasn't rained in a while, and so they've got to come to the United States. Our final contestant is Kamala Harris, the also-ran former flavor of the month, who is back down to where she was in the polls before the first debate happened. Remember, she was the darling after that first debate. She wants, again, not only nuclear do Democrats want to get rid of, they want to get rid of fracking. Getting natural gas. Natural gas is also abundant in the United States and burns clean. There is no CO2 emitted when you burn natural gas. So if Democrats really were, in fact, interested in the environment and believed that CO2 is going to be the death of all of us, they wouldn't be, if you believe you're going to die, if you believe there is an existential threat to the existence of humanity, you don't sit around and debate about the solutions. You say, well, we need to develop new technologies that can make wind and solar efficient. We can use renewables. That's what we have to do. Well, if we're going to die, shouldn't we be embracing the technologies that we have now that would mitigate what you're saying we're all going to die from or because of? But nope. Kamala Harris will ban, they'll all actually ban fracking. We have Kamala saying it.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. So, yes, and starting with what we can do on day one around public lands, right? And then there has to be legislation. But yes, and this is something I've taken on in California. I have a history of working on this issue. And to your point, we have to just acknowledge that the residual impact of fracking is enormous in terms of the impact on the health and safety of communities. Yeah, so thank you.
So would you ban offshore drilling?
Yes, and I've, again, worked on that.
Kamala Harris cracks herself up. Nobody else. I don't know what the humor is supposed to be in that segment where she bursts out laughing, but that's just kind of what she does. Kamala Harris also wants to dictate what you can eat.
Certain countries have changed their dietary guidelines to reduce the consumption of red meat in light of the impact of the climate change.
Yeah.
If elected, will you be supporting change in dietary guidelines? And then how will you plan on implementing the changes so that people effectively change their diets?
Yeah, I mean, it's, and thank you, Carol, for your work and the question. I think of the point that you're raising in a broader context, which is that as a nation, we actually have to have a real priority at the highest level of government around what we eat and in terms of healthy eating, because we have a problem in America. And we can talk about all that we are now, the subject of this conversation. We can talk about the amount of sugar in everything. We could talk about soda. We could go on and on. So the answer is yes. But I'll also say this. The balance that we have to strike here, frankly, is about what government can and should do around creating incentives and then banning certain behaviors. I mean, just to be very honest with you, I love cheeseburgers from time to time, right? I mean, I just do. And I think that, there has to be also what we do in terms of creating incentives that we will eat in a healthy way, that we will encourage moderation, and that we will be educated about the effect of our eating habits on our environment. And we have to do a much better job of that, and the government has to do a much better job of that.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, you love cheeseburgers. I mean, we all do. I don't know whether
you know, from time to
try
time,
the Beyond Burger, the Impossible Burger, right? They try, but it's not quite the same. That's my personal opinion. But would you support changing the dietary guidelines? The food pyramid. But people
to
reduce red meat specifically.
Yes, I would.
Well, you think, well, she's just the food pyramid. Who cares about that? You only ever see it on the side of cereal boxes. Well, that sets standards for food in schools, for one example. This is how far down they want the control to go. This is who these people are. And they don't care how they get there. I already played you Julian Castro bitching about those damned elections that go against his way of thinking and how conservatism has not been run out of the public square and set on fire because it's a witch. Finally, the last clip I'll play, mercifully, you're welcome. And see, 7 hours, I watched this whole thing, and you're getting it all in an hour. Kamala Harris takes us out with a gross misunderstanding of how our government works.
We need to work across the aisle. But I'm going to tell you, I've been there now 2 years and some months. I'm seeing no evidence of it. I'm seeing, I kid you guys not. In our United States Congress, I was part of a committee hearing during which the underlying premise of the hearing was to debate whether science should be the basis of public policy. This on a matter that is about an existential threat to who we are as human beings. So again, back to the United States Congress, here's my point. If they fail to act as President of the United States, I am prepared to get rid of the filibuster to pass a Green New Deal.
So we have to act. Senator, let me ask you on that. And obviously, that's significant.
And you hear Brooke Baldwin at the end. Well, obviously, that's significant. It is insignificant. The opinions of the president on the workings and the rules in the United States Senate are irrelevant. Donald Trump has called for getting rid of the filibuster so he could get his agenda passed, and the filibuster still exists. Senate and the presidency, they are co-equal branches of government. The president does not get to dictate the terms under which the Senate operates. You would think she would know that. I don't know what's scarier, to be perfectly honest with you, that a political party could produce morons like this, and this many of them, or that morons like this exist and there are millions of Americans who can't wait to vote for one of them, for any of them. Neither option is particularly good. But you would think that somebody out there in CNN land would go, well, you know, the President of the United States has no ability to impact the rules of the United States Senate, Senator. Of course, Kamala Harris is famous for talking about guns and saying she'd give Congress 100 days to act how she wanted to act and implement the policy she wanted, or she will do it by executive order. At which point you ask, what's the point of Congress anyway? That's something you'd be asking if any of these people ever achieved the presidency. They will impose their will. They will override the will of the people. They don't care about what people want. They want to rule. They don't want to lead. There's a difference. Leading is different from ruling. These Democrats are not trying to convince anybody of anything. They're preaching to the choir, and they're telling the choir that everybody who isn't in the choir is the enemy and must be destroyed, must be defeated. That's a huge, huge difference between leading and tyranny. They want to be tyrants. All right. That's a whole hour already. There were other things I wanted to get to. I'll leave you on this note. Don Lemon, at the end of the program, at the very end, at like midnight or whatever time it was, Don Lemon made an announcement that this feces show is not a one-off. They are... I can only wait to see the ratings on this thing, but CNN is going back because they're a liberal activist network. They're partnering with the Human Rights Campaign to do a gay rights debate.
Listen to this. CNN is partnering with the Human Rights Campaign Foundation for our next series of presidential town halls on issues that are important to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community. So make sure you tune into that. That's going to be next month. It'll be in Los Angeles.
Yes, the issues that are important to the LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ community, as Dave Chappelle calls them in his great stand-up special on Netflix, the alphabet people. You can't make any kind, they're above criticism. You make a gay joke and the pink mafia will come down on you faster than Bill Clinton on an intern. But yeah, I wonder how many homeless people CNN is going to have to sweep off the streets around wherever they're going to hold that so-called town hall. And I love it. They're going to go talk in Los Angeles. Overrun by homelessness and dominated by illegal immigrants and gang violence. And they're going to go and talk about LGBTQ issues. What are LGBTQ issues? Is there a more protected and preferred and favored class of people in this country? What are their issues? My slippers were not quite fluffy enough this morning. Oh, it's going to be fun. We'll see if the DNC allows that one and who decides to participate, because I think this went to CNN's head. Anyway, that is all the time we have today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. Tomorrow, the Sean Parnell interview. You're going to really, really enjoy the Sean Parnell interview. He is a great, great dude. He's got a great new book out called All Out War. It's a novel. It's a thriller. It is excellent. I have listened to the entire book on tape. It is very long, and I was riveted throughout the whole thing. Don't miss that. Don't miss any of them. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is the hardest thing we will have done, certainly in my lifetime as a country. This is on par with winning World War II, perhaps even more challenging than that.